When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing, and today I'm joined by Nir Eyal, entrepreneur, speaker, and author. Hello, Nir, how are you doing?
Great, how are you?
I'm very, very well, thank you. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while because I'm quite interested in psychology and habits and all sorts of things like that. But before we get too embroiled in that, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you get that amazing name from?
Well, I was born in Israel, but I moved to the United States when I was 3 years old, and I've been here ever since. I live in San Francisco, and I study and write and consult about habit formation and consumer psychology.
Because you're an entrepreneur as well, haven't you? Tell us a little bit about that, some of the things that you've done.
Sure. So that's actually where I kind of got started in this whole psychology of user behavior, is that I used to be in the gaming and advertising industries. And let's face it, you know, these two industries are built upon mind control, right?
And yeah,
advertisers don't spend all that money for their health. They spend that money because it influences people to do the things they want them to do, namely buying their products.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the gaming industry, similar story, right? Games are structured, online games are structured and built to keep people engaged, to keep people coming back time and time again. And so at the intersection of those two industries, I learned a lot about how to change user behavior through different technologies. But what I realized was that there wasn't any guidebook for the rest of us. There wasn't any how-to manual for people who wanted to use the psychology of behavior design for good. Mm. And so when my last company was acquired, I decided to spend some time better understanding as well as publishing these techniques around how to change user behavior using various technologies.
And you've written this book, haven't you, which I think, was it published late last year? Was it November time, I think, last year?
That's right.
Hooked, yeah. And the full title is Hooked.
How to Build Habit-Forming Products.
How to Build Habit-Forming Products. So you've basically codified how advertising can sort of leverage the habits side of things. Can you describe that sort of pivotal moment when you realized, or when you started to realize, how these companies were doing it, getting people hooked on their products?
Yeah, no, it's what was happening was I was seeing these examples. I was seeing all these products being built and ad campaigns being run. And it was interesting to me to find why some things worked and why some things flopped. And what I realized that even in these industries that are so dependent on changing user behavior, like advertising and gaming, there wasn't really a set of principles, or there wasn't a reference manual that people turned to that explained why these things worked. They just did what had worked in the past, or what maybe a competitor was doing that was working. But people didn't really understand the deeper psychology of why these things worked. Meanwhile, in academia, there was lots of very interesting studies going on in laboratories, and sometimes they would make it out to, you know, behavioral economics books that people would read and have very interesting dinner party conversation over.
Yeah.
But there wasn't this book that business people could use to actually build the products.
Yeah.
And I think that's that was something that was missing that I didn't have. And so I wrote the book that I was looking for. I wrote the book that if you're building a product or service and you want people to engage with it for their own benefit, right? I wrote it for people who are building healthy habits in people's lives.
Yeah.
But the problem is, for the vast majority of businesses, you know, nobody cares. Nobody's using the product. And so for those people, I used to be that person, and I understand how frustrating it can be when you're working hard on a product that you really believe in, and for some reason nobody's engaging with it.
Yes.
And so I really wanted to write this manual for people to help them build better products.
Now, we'll come on to the four steps of the hook model in a minute, but I just wanted to, you just alluded there to the sort of social responsibility side of it, because if you've come up with a sort of game plan for leveraging the sort of the mechanics of the human mind and habits and things, I mean, how do you do that and not be evil? I mean, somebody quoted recently, didn't they? Perhaps you can remind me who it was, that the world is becoming a more addictive place.
Right. So Paul Graham said that, the famous investor and Y Combinator founder, said that the world is becoming a potentially more addictive place. And,
yeah,
and I agree, because what's happening is that these cycles are occurring faster, that products are getting better at a faster rate. And that's great, right? These things are good in that the products and services that we use habitually are also the ones that people are voting with their actions they like. Now, I'll let you in on a little secret here, that the book was actually a Trojan horse.
Yeah.
That the reason people buy the book is because they want to build the next Facebook, right? They want their product to succeed. They want to excel in the workplace, and they want to make something great for people. And that's terrific. The number one reason I wrote this book is because I think people can use these techniques for good, right? That's the real reason I wrote this book. But then there's this other reason that gets delivered when you read the book, which is that you realize a few things. One, you realize that these techniques are being used on you.
Yeah.
That the reason that you're checking email 100 times a day, the reason that we can't stop using Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and we feel so compelled by these devices, is no accident. It's not something that just happened and these guys got lucky. It's designed into the DNA of these products to be engaging. And so in the book, I reveal why, what is the deeper psychology that keeps us coming back to these products, so that product makers can integrate these lessons into their own products, but also as consumers, that we understand how these products engage us so that we can get our habits under control. And so there's this dual purpose of why I wrote this book. It's the wrapper of this deeper meaning and deeper message of, you know, number one, we can use this for good. We can build healthy habits with these products. Number two, we ourselves are being manipulated by these products, so we need to be careful. And then number three, how do we, as product designers and business people, how do we use this responsibly?
Because you've got some rules that you go through, haven't you, to make sure that you're using it responsibly. Can you tell us a bit about those?
Right. So the easiest test I give in the book, and there's a whole chapter devoted to what I call the morality of manipulation. And there's a very simple test that I ask people to think about. And this is a test for people who care about the ethics of manipulation. And by the way, that doesn't mean you're going to be bad at business if you don't care about it. But when I get this question of, look, you know, how do we do this ethically? This is my response, that if you're a designer or an entrepreneur or a marketer and you want to use this technology for good, there's a two-part test. The first question is to ask yourself, do I believe that what I'm building materially improves people's lives?
Yeah.
And this is not a question for you to judge other people or for other people to judge you. This is a way for you to figure out how to spend your human capital, how to spend your precious time here on earth. Ask yourself, is what I'm working on materially improving people's lives? Yes or no?
Yeah.
But that's not good enough. That's too easy. The next question you have to answer is, am I the user?
Right.
Am I the user? Why do I do that? Do you know by any chance? I'm guessing you don't, but let's see. Do you know the first rule of drug dealing?
Now, if I answer this correctly, I'm going to sound like I'm a drug dealer, aren't I?
maybe you just watched a lot of gangster movies.
isn't it don't use your own drugs?
That's exactly right. Never get high on your own supply.
Honestly, listeners, I'm not a drug dealer. I have never been a drug dealer. It must be movies I've learned that from.
Right. Never get high on your own supply. So why did I give this two-part test? That it's not good enough just to say, oh, yeah, what I'm working on is good for people. You also have to be the user yourself. I'm making people break the first rule of drug dealing. Why? Because if there are any negative effects to abusing your product that you're working on, you're building the next Facebook or Twitter or whatever, if there's negative effects of people getting too sucked in and getting addicted, guess what? you're going to know about it.
Yes, yes, of course.
And so if you can answer that two-part test of, I believe I'm working on something that materially improves people's lives and I'm the user, not only do I think you're on a good side of the ethics equation, it turns out you actually increase your odds of success. Because if you look at the people who started Twitter and Google and Facebook and Instagram, all of these people were what I call facilitators. They were people who met that two-part test and really do believe they're doing something good for other people, and they built it for themselves. Now, you can make money not passing those tests, right? You can build products that you actually don't think are very good for people, that you don't use. But I think that if you can answer in the affirmative to those two questions, you're on the good side of the ethics question, and you are more likely to succeed.
Fantastic. Okay, Nero, let's drill down into the four steps, because you've basically broke it down into sort of a four-step model, haven't you? Tell us a bit about that.
Sure. So the model is called the hook, and we find that these hooks are in all sorts of technologies that keep us coming back, all sorts of products. I shouldn't just say technologies, offline and online, that keep us engaged. And these hooks have four basic steps. It starts with a trigger, to an action, to a reward, and finally an investment. And we can walk through those four basic steps real quick. This is a very, very short overview. I mean, the whole book is about this model. Sure. But every hook starts with a trigger. It generally starts with an external trigger. An external trigger tells you what to do next with some piece of information. Click here, buy now, watch this. That's some kind of message that tells you what to do next. Mm-hmm. Then comes the action, the behavior itself. Then comes the reward. This is where your itch is scratched, where you get what you came for. It's typically a variable reward. It has some kind of mystery or uncertainty to that reward. And then finally comes the investment. The investment is where you put something into the product, like data, content, followers, accruing a specific skill that you're learning, or reputation score. All of these things are things that you put into the product to increase the likelihood of the next pass. And they increase the likelihood of the next pass by storing value in the product, making the product more and more valuable with use, and loading the next trigger. So when I add friends, when I message, when I like, when I comment, all of these things that I do as the investment in a product bring me back by loading the next trigger.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With a message, with a reply that brings me back through the hook once again. So that through successive cycles through this hook, trigger, action, reward, investment, the more times people go through these hooks, eventually, from requiring these external triggers, eventually they form what's called an internal trigger association.
Yeah.
So an internal trigger is something not in our environment, something in our heads that cues us to action. So being in a particular place, a certain routine, an emotion, and particularly negative emotions, prompt us to action. We're lonely, we check Facebook. We're uncertain, we're on Google. We're bored, we check YouTube. So through successive cycle, through these hooks, these companies don't need these external triggers anymore. They begin to associate with these internal triggers.
So the more number of times you go through this loop, if you like, Nir, the stronger it gets, presumably.
That's right. That's right. And you know, one of the things that our brains are very good at is pattern matching. Our brains are constantly looking to match patterns. And so whatever can provide relief from these negative emotions, boredom, uncertainty, fatigue, loneliness, whatever it is that these painful emotions, whatever we turn to reliably for relief is what we will use with little or no conscious thought time and time again.
And there's a certain pattern to the reward, isn't there? Tell us a bit about that, the sort of variable reward versus the sort of the same reward every time.
Sure. So there's an interesting phenomenon that many of these products that have these habit-forming aspects use not just a reward. It's not just about giving the user what they want. It's about a bit of uncertainty around that reward, a bit of mystery. And this comes from the classic work of B.F. Skinner, the father of operant conditioning. Skinner showed that when he gave a reward on a variable schedule of reinforcement, the subject, in his case, he used pigeons, he used lab rats, and the pigeons would activate, they would do the reward more frequently when the reward was given on a variable basis. So sometimes the pigeon would peck at the lever and they wouldn't get a reward. The next time they would get a reward. And what we see is the same exact mechanism of what makes slot machines so habit-forming and potentially addictive. What makes our newsfeed habit-forming and potentially addictive is this uncertainty, this variability about when we're going to see the next reward.
Yeah. And in your book, you use a nice analogy, don't you? I think it's Pinterest, isn't it?
Right. And so Pinterest, they are the masters of this type of variable reward where the action of scrolling on Pinterest and seeing all these interesting objects of desire, these images, with this layout that they call masonry layout, that when you're on a page on Pinterest, you just see the tips of what's below the fold. And all you have to do to see more of those pictures is to scroll and scroll and scroll endlessly to keep seeing these rewards.
And Facebook's the same, isn't it? You go and check out a notification on Facebook, and then you get some sort of slightly relevant or slightly less relevant content sort of coming up with it.
Right. It's this mix of the mundane and the interesting that keeps us constantly searching.
So a lot of our listeners are sort of small and medium-sized businesses. Obviously, they need to read your book, and we'll talk more about that at the end where they can get it from. But if you could give a couple of top tips to, small and medium businesses who want to embrace this sort of approach, what might they be?
Right. So one thing I should say is that this isn't magic pixie dust, right? Mm. That not every business needs to form a habit, that there are plenty of ways to bring customers back to your place of business without forming a habit. You can use advertising. You can use word of mouth. You can set up a physical storefront, right? You can set up shop at the corner and people will come to your place of business. Now, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that if your business model depends on a habit, if your business model requires people to come back on their own, then you have to have all four steps of the hook. But even if you don't need that, even if you say, look, you know, my product is something that is used infrequently, that's fine. You don't need to form a habit. There's still a lot to learn from consumer psychology that you can use to make the intended behavior more likely. So you can take out pieces from the hook, how to make the action more likely, how to use variable rewards, how to use investments to benefit your business. I was recently called in to a conference where I spoke in front of 700 real estate agents. And the person who was introducing me said, okay, we have Nir Eyal. He's a habit formation expert. He's going to tell you how to make home buying a habit. Well, there's no way. Home buying can never be a habit because it doesn't occur frequently enough. And it's a behavior done with a lot of thought, right? People debate about the kitchen and the bathroom and how many bedrooms and is the price right? That is not a habit. It's the antithesis of a habit. A habit, by definition, is a behavior done with little or no conscious thought. So there's no way you're going to make buying a home a habit. But I did my job. I gave my presentation. And at the end of the workshop, a real estate agent, a few came up to me, and they had these great ideas. One real estate agent said, look, I'm going to connect to the internal trigger of financial insecurity. Mm-hmm. Whenever someone in my neighborhood feels stressed about money, I want them to call me. That's the habit. And I know that for people in my community, that occurs 2, 3, 4 times a week. They're worried about their kids' tuition. They're worried about their retirement. The market fluctuations have caused them an ulcer. They're worried about money. And so I want them to call me, and I'm going to provide them relief. And if they call me 3 or 4 times a week, that's no problem. I want to be there for them. She was thinking about making this app for them as well, they could use to stay in touch with her and to receive more information.
Yeah.
So that over time, the result of this engagement, the reason that she had established this habit was so that eventually when they were ready to buy or sell their home, guess who they're going to call to transact?
Huh.
And so that would be a great example of how engagement leads to monetization.
So it's not always – yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So you really have to think through the nature of your product to work out how to implement this correctly, don't you?
Right, right. That I think far too many businesses, when they think about, okay, how do I make a habit about making me money?
Yeah.
And I think that's the wrong approach, that we have to figure out how do we keep consumers engaged by giving them something valuable, by solving one of their problems. Now, the result over time, if you do that properly, will be that they will come to you and pay you money, right? But that's not where we start. We have to start from the perspective of not how do we get people to check out, to buy something and check out and leave, but how do we build it again? Right? How do we get them to engage with us on a frequent enough basis that we are top of mind?
So we've talked about the hooked methodology in terms of like marketing, but can it be used internally in the organization there to sort of improve habits within the organization?
You know, I'm not an organizational behavior expert, so it's a little bit far afield for me. But what I see is actually a little bit of a different problem. I think that one problem that plagues companies these days is that they've become addicted to certain bad habits and bad technologies, specifically around communication technologies, and even more specifically email. That a lot of companies that I see are unhealthily addicted to busyness. And what's happening many times in the enterprise is that people are under stress. As they're under stress, they're looking for ways to alleviate that stress. And so instead of doing the right thing, which is many times to think strategically, to filter out the noise and concentrate and do the work, instead of doing the hard stuff, they email.
Yeah.
And they have meetings. Why? Because it's something that they can control as opposed to something that actually needs to get done. And so that's something that I think is plaguing the enterprise today, is that we send emails and we have meetings because it's something we can do as opposed to something we need to do.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And that takes advantage. I mean, email is the mother of habit forming technology. It's incredibly habit forming and even addictive because it has these hooks built right into the functional the way that email works. And so I'm a big advocate of figuring out ways to get technology out of the enterprise. I think we're overly reliant on particularly email in the enterprise. But the good news is that there's a lot of new tools coming out. Slack is a good example of a tool that's doing incredibly well right now.
We use Slack as well at work, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So what's wonderful about Slack is that it blocks out email, right? If you're in an organization that uses email, that uses Slack, and somebody walks behind you and sees that you're not in Slack, you're probably slacking off. there's be no reason for you not to be in Slack because it's internal. It's only about this internal company communication. What it does is prevent people from going into this vortex of email junk that they find when they're outside of Slack. And there's other things that we should do. I mean, Slack doesn't solve the problem completely because people can get into over-messaging each other on Slack as well. But I think that thinking consciously around, when is this good for us and when does this hurt us, is something that I think more enterprises should do.
Well, Nir, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's an area I could talk for quite a while, but you better leave it there. So how can our listeners find out more about you and more about the book? Where can they get the book from?
Oh, my book is called Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. It's available wherever books are sold, on Amazon or in the local bookstores.
Yeah.
And my blog is nearandfar.com, and near is spelled like my first name, yeah. nirandfar.com.
I think, did I see your book also on Audible? I think I did recently. Yeah. Yes. Audible as well, folks, if you want to listen to it while driving along or running or standing at the bus stop. Right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and thanks to our listeners for listening. You can find show notes at sitevisibility.com/impodcast. We're on iTunes and Stitcher, and we like reviews. And if you want to email us, it's podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk. And we have a hotline, +44 1273 256 150, if you want to leave a question or a message. So it's goodbye from me, Andy White, and it's goodbye from Nir.
Thank you so much. Good to meet everyone.
And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.